Hi, everyone. Welcome to the panel. Sports racers, I do have to say that Zay Frank did want to be at the panel, but he can't be here today. Mm-hmm. So if he's who you came to see, I'm sorry. I understand completely. We are going to be talking about turning your projects and passions and businesses online into actual revenue-generating businesses today. And we got a great group of panelists here. My name is Ted Reingold, and South by Southwest asked me to put this one together. I started some websites called Dogster.com and Catster.com. They grew out of a custom web application little company I had, and they turned into be a 14-person business. Grew them very slowly, found where there was revenue, found what features people really wanted to use, and grew those in harmony, so to speak. On my left is Shayna Lynn Victor, and she started Morphia Design, a custom graphic shop. From that, she built out an icon, free icon site called Pixel Girl Presents, which is really rad. Anyone's computer would have some better icons on it. That was so popular, she had to figure out how to make some money from serving all those icons, and she started Pixel Girl Shop, which has become her primary business now. Hundreds of handcrafted or small-run goods sold directly through her. Tara Hunt, next to me, is the... Oh, sorry, I'm going through my list. And all right, I'll stick with the order. Gabe Rivera, after Shayna Lynn, started four websites which track popularity of topics on the internet. Memo Random tracks politics and news. Tech Meme, I think, is the most popular with this crowd and tracks geeky and interesting topics related to web businesses. There's also one on baseball. There's also one on gossip. On his left is Tara Hunt, and she is the marketing rogue of Citizen Agency. She's spent a lot of time talking about community, marketing to your community, bringing your community into the product design, whole experience of the site. They're your customers. And Citizen Agency helps companies connect with who their customers are and embrace them. And finally, Ryan Carson, who's got a whole slew of business. There are almost too many to mention. He co-founder of Carson Systems. He's got a great small team. They make software applications like DropSend and Amigo. We'll look at some of those. A great resource site called Think Vitamin, which is tons of great content. And they do a series of worldwide conferences. Oh, yeah. Future of web applications, future of online advertising, and they're really great. Before we go into the actual questions and panel bit, I'm going to kind of take a quick walk through what's going on online, how people are actually making money. And really the key thing is that there's almost nothing new going on. It used to be called the new economy. Dogster, for example, is really the closest business model to it is a magazine. We sell advertising. We have sponsors. People subscribe for extra features. It's a lot like a magazine. And it's important to think as you're developing your business that it's more like a restaurant or a dentist or a clothing store than it is some newfangled possibility. All the old rules still apply, cash flow and inventory, and nothing's gone away. It's all has to be known and really be prepared for. All right, so now in about 5 minutes, we're going to take a cruise through what the possibilities are for making money online. This isn't all of them. Some of you are probably doing much better than these examples here, but these are just to get people going. Advertising and sponsorship. This is probably the first thing a lot of people think of. AdSense ads. The easiest way to make money is to put network ads on your website. It's great. If you want to make $50 a month, you just add them on, boom, you got ads on your site. If you're a site like Plenty of Fish that serves 30 million pages a month, you'll make hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. This is a one-person company, so the numbers work out. For most people, AdSense doesn't work out. This is a site called Socialite Life. I've tried to highlight where the ads are by that green tinted area with the border around it. So on the left, you'll see these are all blog ads. Blog ads work really well for bloggers, and some of us on the stage even pay to have blog ads, to have our ads appear as blog ads in other sites. Again, you need a lot of visitors. But we're seeing, I see a lot of ads with blog ads, and cute overload, go fug yourself. There are lots of sites out there that are, if you have a passionate audience around a topic, there's probably someone who wants to advertise to them. Again, it's a network, so you're splitting half the ads. Here's a site called Vampire Freaks. They've got a direct ad buy for a movie on their site, directly targeted. Sorry, it's a little off to the left there. But that's hard to do, go out and sell your own ad inventory. We do it at Dogster and Catster, and it takes a lot of work. Here's a site called Center Networks, and they sell sponsorships off in the left there, those blocks. That's kind of like a new ad format. I don't even know if the IAB, the Internet Advertising Bureau, has standardized that one yet. I'm really a big fan of sponsorships, as some of our members are. You get a bulk lump sum. It's an annual buy. It's long term. They're not so concerned about impressions. They're much more interested in having that continual presence. It's brand outreach. It's much easier. You do one relationship. There's one check. It saves a lot of time. Here we see TechMeme, which is one of Gabe's site. And on the left, you'll see the most popular topics being talked about and who else is talking about them. And on the right, he's got sponsors, most of whom came to him. And sometimes if they have a new article, it will show in the left, but it'll be very clearly indicated this is a sponsor-paid post. I really like this because it's really creative and the site isn't covered in ads. The next is affiliate programs. This is like when you sell a product for Amazon and you get a bounty. Lots of talk about this 5 years ago. I can't find one good example of anyone doing it now. So we're just going to go on to selling goods. Dogster tried. We couldn't get anyone to buy dog beds even. It just doesn't really work out. This is a favorite piece of software of mine. It backs up your Mac hard drive, and it's a perfect backup. You can boot up from it. This is a one-person company. He sells software. If you have a support question, you'll get an answer from him. It's his business. He probably made this software to back up his own hard drive. He made it so good. Here's a funny guy named Jonathan Colton, and he writes geeky songs. Here we can see a list of songs. You can listen to any song right now, or you can buy that song right now if you wanted to. It's very impressive. He also has donations. We'll get to that in a little bit. Some merchandise, some coloring books. He's trying to be really creative. You can buy ringtones. There's even something else we'll get to. Okay, here's another type of product you can sell that if you can get this, it's great. This is a site, DeviantArt. They have 2 million members. They all have a real passion for art. You can buy a print of anyone else's piece of art, put it on your wall. They make about, I think it's 25% of their revenue from selling art from one member to another. There are a couple examples of this online right now that work really well. Here's Pixel Girl Shop. This is Shayna Lynn's store, and she's selling goods. She handles the inventory, the distribution, everything. She's a store. It's purely online. The next is selling services. Services and goods gets kind of vague in the internet, but here's one of my favorites right here, Laughing Squid Web Hosting. They've been dedicated and committing to serving 100% uptime web hosting. You pay a little more, but you get all the type of support and uptime that you could ask for. They're selling web services. This is DropSend. It's Ryan Carson's, one of his online applications. You are buying storage online to upload items, other people can download it. You can get it for free for some. You can upgrade all the way to high-end businesses. Here's an even more vague concept of service. It's a consulting service. And Tara Hunt's company, that's her co-founder there with her there, Chris Messina.
About to be beamed up.
And they use their blogs, they use their online presences, whether it's their personal blog, whether it's wikis that they post to help people see how you can embrace your community, how you can incorporate them more into your service. And so on her site, the little green box should be over Get in Touch, which is a contact. And that's really where the business is on this site. If you like this, if this resonates with you, click the contact, you can contract them. Here's another one of Ryan's services. This is one of the conferences, Future of Web Apps. It's a service. He gets people together that are really smart, and then much like this conference here, it's a great service. This is the second and last category. Subscriptions, lots of excitement around this. It's surprisingly possible in lots of different realms to sell subscriptions and virtual gifts. You can't make it happen, but if you have people who want such an experience, it's really wonderful. Here again is DeviantArt, the site with 2 million members. They do, I've got this ad highlighted here because they do very little revenue from advertising, even though they serve 25 million pages a day. For them, it's subscriptions and selling the prints. So advertising is just really a way for them to say, why don't you subscribe? And you'll see beneath that, subscribe now, don't see any ads. So in a way, they just show ads to encourage people to move off it. And all their money comes from subscribers. It's beautiful. This is Hot or Not, that website where you could click and say if someone's a 0 or a 10. They started letting people give virtual flowers to other people they liked on the site. Interesting story. They came up with like 4 flowers and 4 prices, and they made one a $10 flower just to make the other one seem inexpensive. Well, it turns out that $10 flower would generated the second most amount of money for all the flowers, because if you really want to impress someone, you get them the $10 flower. Now, these are just little gifts that appear on their page, but everyone knows they paid $10 for that flower. I really like you. The term is virtual gift, but it's real. It means to the person who gave it and to the person who received it. On Dogster, we have a virtual currency to go along with our subscription system. It's called the Zeely. You can buy them in packages. You can also earn some for free, and then you get to give away the blue ribbon down there or the star. And now we're going to go, you guys are going to laugh. This is a Dogster members page, and the green part off to the right, we see the stars and the rosettes. Those were all given to them by different people. We could mouse over and we click through, and you'd see a message and photo that they left behind. It's really real to the owner of Willie that someone gave them all these gifts. It's wonderfully meaningful. This is a really new, interesting thing to me, which is micro-sponsors. It used to be donations. There'd be a tip jar. Amazon started that tip jar thing, and people all got their tip jars on their sites. And I mean, that's a beautiful thing. If you use a service and you appreciate it, you just give a donation. So here's probably the most famous one. This was in the late 90s. Karen, she spent too much money on Gucci purses and shoes, and she wasn't embarrassed to admit it, and she was in $20,000 of debt. And 6 months' time, she had $20,000 and paid off that debt. In fact, she handed over the site to other people who were in debt because people just kept giving her money. They didn't care that she wasted the money. It still boggles me. The internet is so, so, so big that 20,000 people isn't hard to find if you can just get them to you. There was a blogger who famously quit his job after he got enough micropayments to pay expenses for a year, though he wasn't very pleased with it and it didn't work out because every year you got to get all those micropayments again. Everyone's got to. Here is what I think has so much potential, and it's too bad Zay wasn't here today to talk about it more. This is Zay Frank. He's a video blogger. And he created this ducky program where you could sponsor. You could buy a ducky, and their prices will look at, and they'll appear on a particular episode, and each one of those says something behind it. It says, way to go, good job. It connects the person who appreciates the content on that content itself. It shows like, you know, maybe you're part of the varsity team, or I'm in the club, or I care about you. Instead of sitting at home and being like, oh, I love this book, or I love this website, here you can show your love for the website and be included in it. And it links back to your site or wherever you want. Here you can see in the middle, it says, Zay, you enrich our lives. Thank you so much. I was just mousing over one of those ducks. Every single episode has different ducks. This is the one on the left. It's $5. No one gives those. The little duckies are $10. Those big ones are $50. If we go back, that's a lot of $50 ducks. And then there's a bling ducky for $250. I noticed some businesses put that on there. It's just like good PR, if you're trying to be scrappy. A lot of people go to his site. Now, something really interesting, and there's a really good business here, or five of them, because I think Zay is going to be too busy doing a movie or something, is that his Gimme Some Candy program wasn't just for his website. He made it so anyone could create the icons that they wanted to have appear on their site. And this is Jonathan Colton, that singer I showed before. And he's got a banana, a monkey, and a robot. And they're $5, $10, and $25. And then down in the right, that's another screenshot from one of his pages. And there are people who bought monkeys and robots. Like, no one bought a banana, you know? Because they want to show that, like, man, you mean a lot to me. The one that I moused over was saying, a big robot thank you from your Portland family. You know, this is I think micro-sponsorship is really one of the very few new ways for someone to have their business supported online, or their service. It doesn't even have to be a business, especially if you just want to break even. If you just want to have your server bills covered or something. It's really exciting to me. All right, so that is our quick 5-minute walk through how people are making money online. Please hit the mics if you have see ways other people are. Hit the mic if you just want to talk. This is definitely an open panel. Feel free. I'm going to start hitting these guys with questions and plugging about how they've been able to be successful. You guys ready for this?
Yep.
All right. Of you four, did you start your business with an expectation? Did you start your online projects with an expectation of making money? Or was this something that you wanted to do and then you found out, I can make money out of this, or I need to make money out of this because it's taking so much time?
Mm-hmm. I'll answer that real quick. So we used to do a website, and it didn't have any profit model. It was called By Designers for Designers, and we had to stop doing it because it didn't make any money. And so now when we approach things, we always, even if we're passionate about it, we try to think about the business model, because if you don't, that means usually you can't keep doing it. So that's one thing we've learned.
My business, Pixel Girl Presents, was a free site, and I didn't care about the money at all, actually, until my hosting bills were so expensive that I couldn't pay for them. So I started Pixel Girl Shop as an art gallery, and people actually bought stuff, so it kind of grew, and now the ads are on the left featuring the products, and so the shop started paying for the hosting fees and then just kind of exploded. So I didn't realize that it would actually make money.
Yeah, we were more like, we do what we're really, really passionate about, and we realize that, I mean, we live in San Francisco, and rent isn't cheap there, so it was sort of like we needed to support our passions more than make money. I think that's the way that we look at it, and support the work that we're doing.
Okay, so when I started, there's a range of possibilities that I saw, and I was comfortable with the whole range. So, like, the lower range was like, this thing I built would be good resume wear. And, you know, the best case scenario was like, you know, national sensation. And it's been somewhere in between, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe it's around 7. But I was comfortable with the whole range, so I was comfortable doing it.
Did anyone here study business before they got into running a business?
Learn the hard way, baby.
And who is now very interested in how businesses are run, managed?
Me.
I think it's fun. I think some people have this sort of problem with making money off your site, and it's just, it doesn't work. You have to figure out how to make money out of it if you want to keep doing it. So I just want, can I ask the audience a quick question?
Yeah, please.
So will you raise your hand if right now you have a side project that you're trying to figure out how to fund?
Wow.
Awesome. I think, you know, just a word of encouragement, you can do it. I mean, just keep going, because I've even had some ideas already from some of the things you showed, so it's totally possible.
Ryan's always thinking.
How much of the business answers that you need are you able to find on the internet? And how much do you have to go seek textbooks or mentors or sagacious advice?
We seek a lot of mentors in what we're doing, because neither Chris nor myself, we're interested or very good at the business side of things. We're really very much focused on, you know, the more the, you know, community research, just having fun exploring side of things. We're really experimental. So we seek mentors. And, one of the things that we've talked about is actually hiring a business person, maybe even a CEO someday, just to take that stuff over for us altogether.
Friends and using the internet to fill in the gaps and asking my accountant occasionally. Just triangulating all of these things. I've come up with information I need.
Accountants are very important. They're totally worth it.
Yes.
I actually, since I have an indie site, there really isn't a lot of resources for how to have an online shop based on consignment or, you know, a smaller profit margin. I joined some women business groups and was looking around, but they kind of thought pretty small, and I found that I was trying to shoot a little higher. So I guess I just tried a bunch of different things, and some worked and some didn't. And you have to be willing to invest a lot of money in marketing if you want to do that. You know, some of them work and some don't. And, you know, it's totally worth it to get your name out there like that, though.
Maya, we had one great business advisor, which is my co-founder's father's kind of a serial entrepreneur, not in tech, which was good because he didn't really understand what we did, but it was all business to him. And he always said to us, if you're not spending 50% of your time selling, working on new clients, selling your product, getting customers, you're going to fail. And every time he said that, that would scare the bejeebers out of us. Because two of us were engineers. Well, I'll make better product and that'll sell more. And he would buy that for a little bit, but he'd be like, how many ads did you sell this month? So is anyone here selling 50% of their time?
I am.
Awesome. I think it works in, I think, you know, we don't mean it to happen, but it works in with what we do. Like every time I post to my blog, every time Chris posts to his blog, every time we travel and go to like a geek meetup somewhere and meet people, and every time we take pictures and post them on Flickr, every time we Twitter, like everything that we do sort of keeps us, I think, fairly top of mind in the community, and that's who we're serving. So
I'm in a phase where selling is basically not necessary. I could see if things grow from here as I'd like, it would
Bastard.
Become necessary. But.
I mean, before your site is popular, getting your name out there is really important. People forget about you really fast. And so doing advertising, even if it's a weird genre or a crazy gossip site, does help because people will click just out of curiosity. After a while, they'll remember you and you'll have your mailing list and stuff like that. But I think it's really helpful.
See, we're, and I don't mean to like totally be controversial, but I, you know, with advertising, it's not really, see, we talk a lot in our business about connecting with people, and I don't find advertising provides that kind of connection. So what we preach basically is be part of the community that you serve. So that's, you know, that's why we're so involved, because we love it and we're passionate about it. It comes really naturally to us, but it doesn't come naturally to everybody, right? To be part of you know, their customer community, their right. user community. So, you know, trying to find ways to, like, you know, get involved, and not in a let's go in and sell sort of way, but in a way that you get involved and actually start learning and start, you know, being peers, and that's when you're really going to be top of mind.
Right.
Like that's when people are going to be like the first thing they think of when they, you know, think of cool web design or
right.
really awesome indie jewelry, they'll think of...
Yeah, I kind of did it backwards.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of figure I get people there, they buy stuff, and then they enjoy the experience
right.
and realize they're supporting artists, whereas you are doing it the
other way.
Yeah.
Here's a question I get all the time, and I had it all the time, which was, how do you determine the pricing of what you're selling? Especially online, things are new and different. In the end, what I started on our pricing was for advertising was if I could get 10 advertisers to pay $50 a month, that would pay for my office rent, and that would be a great victory for me. So it had nothing to do with an MBA strategy of what this is worth or whatnot. It was what it's worth to me. we have a lot of different products going on here. How do you determine your pricings?
We always do it by what sells. So you kind of figure out what something is worth, and that the only way you know that is, well, people buy it. And so, so what you do is you set a price and you see if people buy it. And that's what we do. When we were trying to figure out how to price DropSend, I had an interesting talk with a guy named Jason Fried from 37 Signals, and he said, the only thing biggest thing you have to make sure not to do is offer too much for free, because then no one will pay, and then you're fucked. And I was like, thanks, Jason. Appreciate that. And it turned out to be true, and that kind of tends to be, if you guys are building web apps, you tend to have to figure out what the right amount to give away for free is, because if you give away too much, no one will pay. So that's how we did that. And with conferences, it's kind of same. What's a fair price?
Yeah, it's really what the market will bear too. So doing your research is really important. Going out and seeing what are comparable products, who's offering comparable services, what are they charging, what's their experience. If you're a little bit more boutique, you can raise that a bit. It depends on, and also coupling it with what Ted said, your own needs on top of that. So doing your research on who else is out there and what they're doing and selling is really important.
You really have to remember to value your time, too. At first, I just did basic pricing based on what everyone else was doing, and then I realized I was running around like with my head cut off like a chicken just to pack a pair of record earrings. So I ended up actually raising prices of every single thing to accommodate the amount of work I personally was doing.
Gabe, your sponsors, how do you decide how much they pay to be there?
Yeah, so I agree with what most people said about, what the market will bear. Some businesses are faced with pricing something that's kind of new. Like, that's what I was faced with. So what exactly do I do? You try to identify some kind of standard and then factor in your intuition on how your differences would affect that price. So I looked at like posted rates on Gizmodo and TechCrunch and thought about what's special about my site, came up with a price, and I think the price we came up with was close enough, because I've always had sponsors, and it was a little tough getting them in 2006. I like barely squeaked by, and now there's enough interest where it's very easy. So I think I hit the right point.
I know at Dogsters, things grew on. Like our first sponsor, it was really just a matter of getting the first sponsor, and they got a really good deal. But then there's a sponsor on your page. And when the next one comes in, you know what your floor is. You can ask twice as much. You can grow more from there. And it's really about that whole experience with them. How much do they have in their budgets? You can be really flexible. You don't have to show them a term sheet that they're going to agree to. We also had we built some features that we thought were going to make us money. Classifieds, they're still live. We've never been able to sell one. Or advertisements geocoded in our newsletter that would go just to people in that town. Both of those, either we got the price point wrong, or in the end, it just was so far from what we needed to make for it versus what people were willing to pay, that if we'd known that before we started it, we wouldn't have started it. We hoped it would work out, and then we just killed it when it didn't. You just gotta sometimes just eat it and decide it's not gonna work out.
Are you saying to be experimental?
Am I? Sure.
I'm Alex Schultz. I'm the International Affiliate Channel Manager at eBay. So I was devastated when you said that affiliates is not making money for people anymore, because I can tell you we're paying in the well over $100 million a year to affiliates, and it's a big business for me. It's my full-time job. And especially on the classifieds thing, we've seen some great success. And those of you with laptops in the audience, take a look at Earthlink. There's another site called preloved.com, which is in the UK, who've plugged on auction environments using eBay auction content, who've plugged on shopping.com shopping channels, and made a lot of money by those people on their site who had thoughts about products closely related to their site, which, like eBay, you can't find it because we've got a crap finding system. But those sites, people are really close to it and get in there. And the other couple of points on affiliates I'd point out, because I really want people to be thinking, like,
please
affiliates,
tell everyone.
You can make a lot of money, especially with eBay. It's a huge business, and we'll pay you up to 75% of the revenue that we make on any sale. We'll pay you up to $25, I think it is, for any new user you bring to our site. So it's a lot of money we pay. two other examples I'd give out. Look at myspacemaps.info. That's a really cool example of a widget that's been monetized with eBay link at the bottom.
What's the name of that widget?
Myspacemaps.info. You'll see it out on blogs on the web, and I don't think it's on MySpace anymore after their recent changes. But and then the other one that I'd shout out is Shoe Money. Anyone in the room know Shoe Money? Very few. So you guys are not in the affiliate community at all. But look at auction ads. Auctionads.com. Take a look at that. Another really innovative way people have found a way to make money with the eBay affiliate program, and there are tons. And to kill one last presumption about affiliates, the majority of our program is not paid search. Vast majority of paid search done in-house. Vast majority of our program is innovative people with cool sites who found ways to integrate our product.
Awesome.
Ted, can I ask the audience a quick question?
Yeah.
So out of those people that raised their hands that said they were trying to, you know, do something and make money out of it, how many of you are doing that on the side of your full-time job? So cool. A fair amount of you. I just had a quick tip that I've learned that I want to share with you. The most important thing is just, and it sounds harder than it is, but all you have to do is open Excel and do a cash flow and figure out how much money do you need to quit your job. Mm-hmm. And just do the math and aim for that, and that's all there is to it.
That's a great pricing model.
Yeah.
How much do I need to quit my job?
Exactly. And you'll find you can do it. I mean, that's what we did with Carson Systems. I mean, I sat in my top bedroom for a year and sold this piece of crap software that I built that I'm not selling anymore, but, you know, I ended up making enough money, and now we've got a business. But it just takes some time to get there, and, you know, just aim for that.
Yes, time.
Yeah, but freedom and an open schedule is worth a lot of money, mm-hmm. I mean, I find.
To Tara's allusion before there, there's a lot of talk of failing fast these days, and as Tara likes to say, it's inexpensive to fail quickly. Did I get that right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's cheap to fail. It's cheap to fail, so fail often.
So probably all of us up here have failures. I know I do. You know, don't let that get in your way. You're maybe not going to get it right the first time, but just get through it. Just get through it as fast as possible. Find out as quickly as possible. Is it going to work? Is it not? And classifieds work really well for a lot of people. They just didn't work on Dogster.
Hi there. I was just curious what your exit strategy is.
Ryan asked us that.
Yeah.
And I'll let these guys answer.
Well, the beautiful thing about doing a lifestyle business, which was what we have, it pays, you know, for our life, and we don't make millions out of it, but it's comfortable, is that you can kind of do it for as long as you want to. We're trying to sell drops in at the moment, which is an interesting experiment, and I guess that's an exit strategy. But so we plan on selling web apps eventually. I mean, you don't want to run them forever. It just gets boring. So that's the plan. I mean, we were talking about this, and basically there's a big tax advantage to selling your company, and you'd be kind of crazy to not sell it eventually. So my belief is every company should be built to be sold, because that's just a good way to do it. So that's our plan, but we don't plan on doing that for a long time.
So one of the problem that Chris and I have is our company is kind of it's us. So to sell our company as an exit strategy would be, you know, I don't know, sin, illegal, I don't know. But I don't know. I don't want to speak for Chris, but I know for me, I just want to do this as long as I can do this. You know, as long as I can enjoy it. The day that I wake up and I dread going in, you know, to my own business and doing what I do, is the day that I just let it vanish, and that sort of, and then move on to whatever my passions take me to.
So, I'd like to continue doing what I'm doing. It's fun, and I'm not seeking a sale of my company. I have been approached by companies, and I meet them.
Good thing Michael isn't here. He'd be like, who?
I usually meet with anyone who takes that step. It's good to meet people. But they don't tend to see the value of what I'm doing the same. I'm not just talking about price. I'm talking about like just the whole idea, what's valuable and what isn't about it. And I don't see, you know, me fitting in well, or, you know, the experience being good. I mean, that may change down the road, but I'm just I don't have an exit strategy that I have in mind. I'm just taking it 1 month at a time.
I had never actually even thought about it until somebody asked me a month ago. I love...
Why hadn't you thought of it?
Because I started this as a hobby, and I was not very business-oriented about it. I didn't actually realize I was good at business till I did this. And it was a lot of trial and error, and I still feel like it's growing, so I haven't even had time to stop and look at it. But I'm not saying I wouldn't sell it, but the premise of the Pixel Girl businesses is really that it's my stuff that I like, that I pick, and I can't imagine somebody else being me. But I wouldn't say no if maybe I could be a consultant, but then that would be boring. I guess I don't know.
I did kind of pick all these panelists because of their commitment to a sustainable business. And, you know, around Dogster, we know the only way we can guarantee our success is by executing and building the most sustainable business we can. So we find thinking about exit strategies is really quite distracting and maybe nice to fantasize about sometimes, but no one else is going to care about your business except you, so we're the only ones who do that.
But I'd recommend if you read one book about business, read The E-Myth. Mm-hmm. It's called The E-Myth. It's called Why Most Small Businesses Fail and What to Do About It. It's awesome.
Jeremiah.
I will.
Hey, Jeremiah. A lot of startups actually don't succeed. I think it's 1 out of 5 actually make it after the first year. So congratulations to the 5 of you. There's a lot of people that are wide-eyed about entrepreneurism. So with your success, can you share with us what were the sacrifices that you've made and exactly how many hours a day awake, percentage-wise, are you working on these things? It's a big passion.
We work 4 days a week, which I'm really proud of. We decided at Carson
City. Get out.
I'm serious. We decided that because, and this is the best thing about running your own company, you can do whatever you want. And so we decided that we were going to pay our employees full salary, but we'd only work 4 days a week. And that doesn't always happen. I mean, I'd say it happens probably 85% of the time. But it's important to us. We think that, you waste your time if you work 5 days a week. And thankfully, because we do a product-based business, we can do that. If you do a service-based business, you can't leave on Fridays. People get pissed off. So we take pride in the fact we work as little as possible. I think that's pretty important. And secondly, what we sacrifice is peace. Sometimes when you run your own business, it's freaking scary because sometimes money doesn't come in and you just have to be ready for the fact that sometimes there's no pay, but sometimes there is, and it's nice.
Yeah, you sacrifice a lot of security and feelings of security. There are months that Chris has to be like, chillax. It'll all like fall into place, and I'm like freaking out in the corner, wondering how we're going to pay our San Francisco rent, and I'm going to pay my son's tutor. But we try not to. I mean, at first, I think we did a lot of sacrificing of our personal lives and of the things that we were doing, in the community. So the bar camp work and the co-working stuff, we were like letting those emails slip and not doing a lot of work. We were just doing client work to make money. And then we decided at one point that we were losing exactly why we were good at what we were doing by stopping living and stopping in doing the stuff that we were passionate about. So we decided that actually you don't make sacrifices like that. The kind of sacrifices that you make is like cutting back on, I guess the woman in her Gucci bags, right? I've never had a Gucci bag in my life. But, you cut back on those sort of things in order to not cut back. Whatever you do, don't sacrifice what is really important in life. And that's like having a life and your family and that sort of thing.
So I went 2 years without a salary. That was a bit of a sacrifice. I spend all my time working on my site. I mean, it involves a lot of watching what it does to see problems that can turn into opportunities to, tune things so that it's better in the future. And that involves a lot of watching. But I enjoy it. And so I don't know if I consider that a sacrifice, because right now I'm enjoying it and it's fun.
When I was just doing Morphia Design, I could brag that I only worked 20 hours a week, and I made more than I did when I had my regular corporate job.
Awesome.
And I was much happier. But then I'm sort of like him. I can't stay away from projects. So I really am online all the time. I work all the time. So I guess that's supposed to be a sacrifice, though if I want to sleep in and walk my dogs for 3 hours, I can. I just work till 3 a.m. but I do love it. I mean, that's the thing. I tried to take my laptop on my honeymoon. I don't like not doing stuff.
Sweet.
So right, I'm obsessed. I definitely am. And, you know, also when you're interested in something and no one's doing the same thing as you, they're not going to care about it like you are. And so there is the sacrifice of being sort of alone, I guess. Like, I don't feel lonely, but I do feel like I can't ask somebody what I should do with my company because no one else is doing the same thing. And that's kind of weird.
I'd suggest that since it's likely that your idea or plan or project will fail as a business, to not spend more money than you can afford to spend.
Totally agree.
Because then you'll have money or a cushion to try the next thing or the next thing. It's really important to just try and keep more money coming in than going out.
There's a lot of ways to do stuff for free, too. Like, there's free stuff and free advice and free programs and grants and everything everywhere.
Invoicing systems, and it's getting pretty nice out there.
I mean, communities, message boards, everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Open source software that you can use instead of building stuff yourself.
Hi, my name is Neil Weinberg. I actually run a technology boutique PR firm called Weinberg Communications. My question is, I heard Tara talk about popularizing the site by networking with community, and other people talked about online advertising. I'm wondering from each of you, what tactics would you rank as 1, 2, 3 in order to popularize your site, your service, your offering? Because before you can monetize it, you've got to have people coming there. I wonder how you popularized your sites on a bootstrap budget.
Just make something that people like using.
Totally.
And, you know,
totally
if you get lots of people using your site without marketing and word of mouth, then you know you got something.
But what were the specific tactics you employed to get people to come?
I mean, Dogster's so silly that it's almost hard speaking seriously about it. but I guess, you know, I made
some
a site.
People are really serious about dogs, though.
Just something that didn't exist somewhere else.
Mm. I think Gabe's a good example of this. Basically, building something that's really good will work most of the time.
Or it may work even.
Well,
there's no guarantee.
I mean, you know, for instance, you know, DropSend works because people need to send big files and we make it easy. You know, people come to our events because the content is really, really good. And so I think the point is you have to be willing to put in the time for an extended amount of time doing quality stuff and believe that people will come. Yeah. And, you know, we don't spend any money on marketing, and now we're starting to change that. But thankfully, I think that's pretty important. I mean, people, you got to have good stuff.
Right.
You expect people to come and start there, and then you can move on to, you know, spending money in advertising. And,
you know, people love free stuff. Pixel Girl Presents became popular because it was free. It wasn't free for me, but it was so free and it got so much traffic that when I opened the shop, I just put ads on the left side and automatically it created a filtering. So that was the first exposure. I mean, you can't get people to spend their money very easily, but...
Yeah, that's a good point. Free is...
Free is great if you can give out free desktops or like a free widget or free subscription to something for like a week. People will
free
sign
trials.
Up and then you'll have a list of things. I give out discount codes for free. If people sign up, I'll give out free earrings or, you know, something
awesome.
Like that.
Let's keep going then.
Hi, my name is Franca Wren. I work for Johnson & Johnson Vision Care, and something that's pretty important with our users or consumers for the website is, for the global websites, is connecting with them on a consistent basis. What advice would you give to keeping users coming back and keep them engaged?
Well, maybe the question isn't about, you know, I don't know if anybody here knows who John Cote is, but he was one of the founders of The Well. Everybody here know what The Well is? It's like pre-internet, amazing community. And I was privileged to have coffee with him, and one of the things he said is, like, back in the Web 1.0 or whatever, the broken paradigm was pages, right? Because people wanted to drive sticky eyeballs to pages, right? You want to drive traffic to pages. And then, you know, now it's everybody wants their own network, social network. Everybody wants their own community site. So Johnson & Johnson, whoever else, you know, these big corporations want to drive, you know, the community there. Well, why not go to where the community exists already? Why not go and, you know, learn from them and participate and you know, find out what their needs are and you fulfill those needs? And I think that's really, you know, for these big companies that are really interested in, you know, community, I think that's the key, not creating yet another social network portal on your website.
Yeah. She's our expert on reaching out to community, so.
Hi, I'm Amy from Avenue A Razorfish. I have two questions for you, if that's not too greedy. The first is, do you ever feel obliged to actually state to some extent how much revenue is coming in and out in a public company kind of way? I'd be really keen to ask this to some of the folks that had sites where people are buying, like, you know, small widgets to kind of say how great they think the site is, to kind of say, hey, I'm not getting rich off of this thing. This is going to you know, help the server bill. And the second question is, you've all mentioned at one point or another that you failed. Just a quick story on, you know, a project where each of you has failed, I think would help, you know, everyone that is interested in starting a similar project.
Cool. We failed. We built this product called Flight Deck, and it was a precursor to DropSend. And I built it myself, and it was to send large files, and it was priced at £199 a month, and it was just too expensive. And I'm a crap salesman, so mix those two together, and you get a bad product. So that's how we failed.
To answer the first question, actually, Chris and I make up. We haven't really published our citizen agency finances, but, you know, we run a co-working space, and we make sure we publish everything that comes in and sort of goes out on the co-working space because it's a community space. Citizen agent. If we knew better, like what we were actually bringing in and spending, we might be able to publish that. Maybe our accountant's helping us. But for the second question, I had another company back in Canada called Rogue Strategies. I took too many risks. I moved my company at the height of its success from Calgary to Toronto, taking a huge gamble on one client that fell through on me. So had to go back to work.
Any failures?
I can't think of any.
Yeah, I was wondering. Gabe's got a golden touch.
Money's coming in, never failed.
By the way, his sponsors contact him. He tried going out and getting them, and it was so much work, so he just waits till the ones who are interested contact him.
Yeah, seeking out sponsors didn't. I found it didn't work because so many of them are just like. So many things have to be right and in place for them to do my sponsorship program. Just sitting back and waiting for them to come to me has been the right decision.
I don't think of much of what I did as failures, just things that I tried that didn't work. I sold the ads on Pixel Girl Presents. It was too much work. I didn't like it. I've listed things on my sites that didn't sell. But some of them I keep around just for atmosphere, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if I can't sell a $300 Lego ring, but I can, I still like them there because I feel like it adds to the atmosphere. So I don't know if I think much of it is a failure.
Awesome. Before I just started Dogster, I was doing custom web development. So if you want some numbers, in 2003, I billed for $24,000 of projects. You know, I don't know how much time I spent on it. It was brutal. The next year, my goal was to hit $40,000 in revenue from clients. I hit $40,000. I'm sure I lost money in the end that year. Dogster made $300,000 in 2005, and it's a California C corporation now, and it made over $1 million last year. But that's three partners, lots of growth, lots of work.
You know, actually, I just thought of the biggest failure that I've ever had, and it's affecting me right now. I didn't get anything protected. So I opened up Pixel Girl Shop, and there's a Pixel Girl trademark belongs to somebody else. And when I go home, I'm changing my whole company name, and it's going to cost me a lot of
2 years into the business?
2 years into Pixel Girl Shop and 7 into Pixel Girl Presents. And I have no name. Everything's freaking trademarked. So working on it. Anybody want $100? Come up with a cool name for me. So that's my biggest problem. When you start something, you don't realize it's going to become big.
Yeah.
And then you have you need to protect yourself, and you're like, damn. So
I'm going to add a piece of advice here, which is the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has a website where you can search on any keyword term. It's called TESS is the acronym for it. You can see any outstanding marks on terms you'd like to use. You can even do logos, though it's really hard to sort through them. But having a domain name does not protect you in any way that you can use that name. It's really, really important. One of the earliest things I did was spend $350 on a friend trademarking Dogster and my other company name, One Match Fire. And literally by a month, someone came in after with a previous claim on Dogster, which if I had waited another month, that I could have never used a name.
Wow.
Live and learn.
That was actually my question, so if anyone, you know, how you protect yourself, you know.
Yeah. Patents and trademarks, it's a tricky thing.
But not just the brand, also the idea.
You know? Yeah. Oh, you know, and that actually, I think, works into that, though. We actually talk about this a lot because we do a lot of, you know, co-working and bar camp, et cetera. Chris calls these community marks, we don't want to do any filing in any patent offices because we think that even though patents and trademarks are very useful for businesses, it's a really broken process, and I think it's like the, you know, the DRM of the business world. It kills ideas, it kills movement forward in a lot of ways. Like if this other Pixel Girl could just live with being whatever, and she didn't have a patent or a trademark on Pixel Girl, then you could continue your business. We could all, you know, if that process wasn't there for people to exploit it as well,
right?
You know, which happens all the time. We see patents and patents being filed by all these big companies and they stop progress in the community. Personally, I think I don't know. There's the system is broken. Parts of it work. We need to sort of work around that.
Can I chime in another question on it? Because a lot of people are concerned about this. Web businesses are so public. Your pricing's there. Your product's there. Your whole interface. Like someone doesn't have to go to your store and take pictures of it and send it back to someone. Like they can just do it from their office. And that's a concern I hear from a lot of people. I'm not concerned about it because we're so committed to making it better than anyone could copy.
Yeah.
Are you guys concerned about it? I think Shauna Lynn said you had some people stealing some of your product
people
sellers.
Download my site all the time, and they post it as their own. They just change the header. It even says Pixel Girl Presents, but it'll say something else on it. Usually if you send a fake cease and desist, they just remove it because they're afraid of you. But I do have that problem a lot. I mean, people troll my site and they pick artists they like, contact them directly, sell the stuff for less. It's really annoying. But like him, it's sort of just being ahead of everybody. You see it, you drop them, you move on.
There's some guy who's copied my JavaScript and put it in his similar service and has now an automated comment spamming system for people who mention my site. I think what I offer is providing value to the people who to my users, and I don't think that stuff really threatens me, so.
Please play nice.
Yeah, execution, what did they say? Like, execution is 9/10 of the law. So you can steal ideas and stuff, but Gabe has created an experience. Shayla's created an experience. Ryan's created experiences. You know, it's not ideas. It's the experience of it.
Should I say my inspirational piece?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So we were sort of talking about this stuff and before, and I was saying that I think now is the most exciting time to be alive and doing business, because we have this amazing enabler called the web. And I would just encourage you guys that if ever was the time to succeed and be able to make a living off of a good idea, it's now. So don't quit. Remember that, you know, all you got to do is cover your expenses for a while, you know, and aim for that. And you can do it. There's so many good ideas, and there's enough viewers in the world that
it doesn't matter where you live. I'm in the recession state, so I just don't sell to my state.
We got a couple more minutes left, so let's try and help.
Hi, I'm reaching a point with one of my ventures where it's getting to be time to add other people to the company. Mm. How did that experience go for all of you, and what kind of consideration and words of caution do you have?
My really quick advice would be spend a lot of time communicating with them up front and really feel out what they want to get out of it and what you're expecting out of them. Because people will not say things for 6 months and then they'll say, I own 10% of the company, or I own 50%. Or so really communicate and know what each other wants, because it's really easy for things to go south.
Payroll is one of the most expensive things you'll ever do. So do not hire people until you absolutely have to. And even then, you know, I mean, it was Jill and I for a long time, and even Jill didn't join until we could barely afford to bring her on. So look at your cash flow and just figure out, okay, you get to the point where it hurts so bad that you think, I'm going to either quit or kill myself, and then you hire somebody. But don't do it. Do not do it before then, because you'll go out of business. If your cash flow is tight. And a lot of people get VC for this, and it's such a terrible idea. You know? Yeah.
But you know what you could do is just have contractors. Yeah. If you can give people an open schedule, then you're allowed to have contractors. If they're part-time, they can set their schedule. You're not really their boss. That's what I do. After you gift wrap till 6 in the morning every night, and you wake up in the morning, you cannot wrap one more thing. You cannot sell one more product by yourself. You're not happy. That's when you hire somebody to do the stuff you just cannot do all by yourself. You can't be everybody.
I haven't hired anyone. And I think so far it's been a good decision. That's going to have to change at some point. The nice thing about not hiring people, if you're like a tech company, very often your whole software architecture changes and becomes more efficient. You find yourself automating things more, and all your processes tend to become more efficient, which is a good thing. I heard about eBay originally. eBay relies on user ratings, like buyers and sellers rate each other, and obviously that's been a tremendous asset to eBay, but. Originally, I think I read the founder was considering something else that would be harder to scale, where they'd be involved in rating, and necessity because they didn't have so many employees led to a system that worked out better for them.
Yeah, necessity is the mother of invention, right? Well, I would say, for if you're hiring somebody, be really, 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 really make sure that you're on the same level, that you're like, that person's down with, I mean, you can't expect all your employees to like pull for your dream like you are, but that they have at least like a portion of the passion that you do, that they're not just like some someone that just wants a job.
I'm really sorry, the hook just came out. We're going to have to end the panel.
Can I just say one thing? I know we were talking free marketing. I'm Steve Poland, and I do some writing for TechCrunch with Arrington. I know there's a room full of entrepreneurs. I'm looking for startup ideas, anything you guys got going on. I also do a blog, Tequila Shots, and that's where I brainstorm ideas. And
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for coming.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much to the panel.